is Hockey Central with David Amber, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Great to have you along. Welcome in, Hockey Central. How you fellas doing today?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. Matt Marchese. Marchese was giving me a little bit of a hard time, though, our producer.
Yeah, he's trying to tell me the importance of Boston having to win that game. Like, 8 points ahead of everybody.
Everyone knows game 50 when you're in first is the most crucial game of the season, Matty.
We do have a jam-packed 2 hours coming your way. Oh, he's getting angry now. We have Take Your Pick All-Star Edition coming up for the gentlemen. Some good elaborate questions as we circle towards All-Star Weekend in St. Louis, which should be a lot of fun this weekend with the skills on Friday and the game on Saturday. We're going to welcome in Jarmo Kekäläinen, who has done an exceptional job as the GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're one of the feel-good stories so far in this NHL season. He'll be joining us in about an hour's time. Billy Jaffe, a friend of the show and a personal friend, a great guy over at Nesson, does great analysis of the Boston Bruins. Are they sitting where they want to be? Is there some problems in Beantown? What's going on there? We'll dig to the bottom of that. As well, on the heels of Derek Jeter and Larry Walker getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame, congratulations to both of them, made us think, as far as active NHL players right now, has already punched their ticket into the Hockey Hall of Fame? A great debate. Some are no-brainers. Some are right on the fence. We're going to flush through that, and there's a lot of interesting names on this list, not just the for-sure locks, but there's some guys who are right there. If they retire tomorrow, could they be in the Hall of Fame? We're going to have that debate. So there's a lot going on over the next 2 hours here on Hockey Central. Great to have you along. It's the last day before All-Star break officially begins. Half the players already down in the Caribbean somewhere. Oh, yeah. Are you guys getting anywhere?
Not telling you if I was.
you can't believe Stu anyway, right? Remember Stu? Oh, no, I'm staying here. And he's off on the next flight. But we're going to start with our Fast Five, fellas, and we'll get rolling with that, and then we'll dig into some of this conversation because there were some interesting storylines last night in the National Hockey League. We start with you, Justin. Joel Quenneville makes his return to Chicago and was victorious with the Florida Panthers.
I don't know if you watched the game, but with the very, a special tribute there in Chicago, and Q kind of had that, like, aw shucks smile going, like he's not the most demonstrative guy, but that was really special to see, and cool for him to get the win. Florida, a force to be reckoned with here. They're 7-2-1 in the second half of back-to-backs. Meanwhile, the Toronto Maple Leafs act like the second half of back-to-backs is like, you know, going to actual war. So it can be done. You can win those games. Florida does it very well. They're now third in the division, just a point back at Tampa. Look out for Florida.
And they went back-to-back with goalie Bob, Sergei Bobrovsky, getting the win on back-to-back night. So Florida surging into the break. Great news for them. Meanwhile, Stu, David Krejci's third period tally lifting Boston over the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, David Krejci had a goal and assist last night. They battled back, down 2-1 in the third period. Jeremy Lozin from Providence got called up in his second game, scored his first of the season. And, despite what Matty Marchese said, the Boston Bruins are sitting on an 8-point lead in that Atlantic division. So Tampa Bay has those game in hands, but as we say, those game in hands don't mean anything unless you win them.
Boston Bruins currently sitting second overall in the National Hockey League, so the beat goes on
no
in
big deal.
Beantown. No big deal. We had the Battle of the Keystone State, the Flyers rolling over the Penguins. A bit of a surprise there. Brian Elliott, 19 saves in the shutout.
I should, before I go into my speech here on Pittsburgh, are we going to talk about them later? I have something longer to go on. Should I pull it out now?
Sure.
I thought Mike Sullivan made a big mistake after the game. He really ripped into his team, said that bad effort, bad details, bad this, bad, bad, bad. He was really...
After the game.
Yeah, after the game. He was upset with his team's performance, and I thought for all this team has done through injury and all they, you know, where they are in the standings versus the adversity they've faced, there have been so few nights where you've had complete lemons like this that it felt like you should just, they deserved a pass
here.
Throttle. And it might be one of those games where if I was a player, I'd be like, really? Like, we're going to get, you know, we're still going to hear it after that game. I don't know. I personally didn't think that was necessary.
So we have some breaking news. Justin Bourne says that Mike Sullivan has lost his team following his tirade postgame. Is that what you're reporting right now?
Yeah.
Got that in the Post-Gazette tomorrow.
But I just want to add as well, that's the sixth time the Flyers have given up less than 20 shots, which is, there are only two teams in the league give up fewer shots per game than the Flyers.
Wow. Yeah. Alain Vigneault has to like what his Flyers are doing currently, just on the cusp of the playoffs, tied with the Columbus Blue Jackets. In that final spot. Justin Williams, once again, this guy is unbelievable. The shootout winner follows that up, and he's looking great again.
I wish I could come off the couch and have success in my first couple games. It probably takes about 20, 25 games to get accustomed, but he had a shootout winner last the first game of the season for him, And two goals last night as they beat the Winnipeg Jets 4-1. Carolina still in first place in that wild card race. And they're 2 points behind the Islanders right now in third in that Metro division. So good for Carolina. And people are making a big deal about this, you know, in the office here about the storm surge. I love it. I wish I can unretire and come back to Carolina and do it. It's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And if you have a problem, you can mention me at Stu Monroe on Twitter, and we can get to the bottom of it.
I clearly have had a problem, and Stewie has dealt with me, so I'd like to formally apologize.
That is awesome. And let's wrap up the Fast Five with this. Josh Bailey, 3 points. Thomas Greiss, 40-save performance. The Islanders, finally, they lost to the Rangers twice in the last 8 days. Finally, they get a little bit of revenge in that New York showdown.
Yeah, they, you know, as you said, 3 times in 9 days, that's a lot. What I thought was really interesting here is how important Panarin looks to the Rangers. Here's what their coach had to say after the game about Panarin. With Panarin in the lineup, our lineup looks a lot different. The other team has to pay more attention to him, and he makes the two teammates he has better. Really, in essence, you lose three players because the two guys he's playing with aren't as good either when he or as they would be with him in there. So that's an interesting comment. You lose one guy and three guys in your team get worse.
Yeah.
Your three guys worse.
Yeah.
So I was visible at the Rangers last night. Islanders finally got it done here.
MVP. I mean, Panarin has to be in that consideration. He's been better than advertised. And remember, he signed that incredible, $11 million deal. And everyone sort of was going, wow, that might be too much. Apparently not, right? Like, he's playing up to that.
Is he a Hall of Famer if he retired? In 3 years?
We will have that debate coming up. And again, Jarmo Kaikkalainen, as well as Billy Jaffe, will be joining us. We'll dig in a bit more on the Penguins, which is something Justin wants to get into as well. But let's start with some impressive wins last night. And let's start with the Florida Panthers, guys. First of all, and I know we have a big Maple Leaf audience listening with our flagship over at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This was the nightmare scenario for the Leafs. They have an absolute lemon on Saturday. They mail it in. Half the guys' heads were already in the Caribbean or at Augusta National or whatever. They were done on Saturday from the moment the puck dropped. And at the time, it was like, oh, that's a bad loss. But it didn't seem horrendous. But then since then, look what's happened, right? Florida is now on a 6-game winning streak. Carolina's won 2 in a row. Columbus has won 5 in a row. They play tonight against the Jets. Philadelphia's now won 2 in a row. The Islanders won last night. All the teams they're conceivably chasing, the Leafs currently sit 10th now in the Eastern Conference, and they find themselves 3 points out of the final playoff spot, and they've got to climb over some teams now. And I don't want to get all dramatic here, but this is becoming a bit of a hill. And last night was another case that there's no easy outs here. Florida looks like a legitimate team that we thought would be improved with Bobrovsky and Quenneville. Is that a fair statement?
It is, but I think you got to manage your smiles and your cries. And I think, you know, in this city, when they're winning, everything's great. And when they're losing and there's a little bit of adversity, we suck again. So it's a long season. Mm-hmm. And you know, since Sheldon Keefe has been at the helm, they've been the highest scoring team in the NHL. But they have some work to do on the defensive end. And I'm sure over the break, they're going to be doing a lot of video, the coaching staff, not the players. They're probably going to be at Augusta or at the bar, but they're going to be prepared for this final push here. And with Toronto, a lot of those games that they've had success, they've been dominating offensively, the puck possession game. They were monitoring and then managing their turnovers in the defensive end. But so they've either been really good or really bad. They just got to find that middle ground. And, Sheldon Keefe's a good young coach. I'm sure he's going to figure it out. But there's a lot of other good teams in the NHL, too. So that's the one thing I don't want people to, lose sight of. Florida's good. Tampa's good. Carolina's good.
Yeah.
So it's the one thing we could say, they're going to control their own fate, and they're not going to have to say, the Islanders are playing really, really good or Florida's playing really good. There's enough time in this season that they control their own fate. And if they decide they're going to play hockey the right way, they'll be more than fine getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, as you said, if the Leafs do get into the playoffs here, it's kind of anyone's ball game because I think there's a cluster of good teams, but no one stands out as like elite. Boston and Tampa are notably like another echelon there. But I think if Toronto can just get their foot in the door, get these players back from injury, you got to remember this Toronto team, we haven't seen them healthy one game this season. There literally has not been one game where that team has been fully healthy. So,
but it's not going to happen. I mean, Riley's out indefinitely. I mean, it sounds like Muzzin's.
Well, it'll happen in playoffs, right? Like the expectation is if this team is together, everyone should be healthy by then. Mikheyev would be back, Trevor Moore, and the whole crew. So we don't even really know what they look like fully assembled. But obviously, there's no easy series. If you get into this point, you're playing one of, you know, Washington, if you get a wild card spot, Boston, Tampa, Florida. These are all good teams.
The one stat that's sort of scary to me is that there's only two teams with more goals against in the NHL. Mm. So, you know, they say you can outscore your problems, but there's a lot of problems on the defensive end where it might be too much for the offense to take care of.
It would be unprecedented to have a team in the bottom three in goals against make a deep playoff run, let alone win a Stanley Cup. We've just never seen it before. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but we've never seen it before.
Right.
You know, the Oilers in those great 80s teams where they had, you know, just wall-to-wall Hall of Famers up front. They had Paul Coffey, another Hall of Famer at the blue line. And, yeah, they were putting up 5, 6, 7 goals at will. They still had Grant Fuhr, and they still had some lockdown defensemen, and they still weren't, you know, they weren't in the bottom 2 or 3 of goals allowed. It was a different era of hockey. Yes, they gave up a lot, but in relative terms to the other teams at that point, they still were a decent defensive team when they had to be. What I want to know is, does Florida remind you of Toronto at all? And what I mean by that is they have this high end, they have the Dadonov, Huberto, Barkov, right? Just like the Leafs have their big three up front. Then they've also got this great complementary scoring now with Achari and Hoffman. Connolly's been big. Vetrano last night with a hat trick. Do they seem like they're the highest scoring team in the league? So they almost have the same blueprint essentially as the Maple Leafs to some degree.
Yeah, well, no, I think you're bang on there. Like if you look up and down throughout these teams, it's like, you know, they have some players who on their blue line who are okay, but no one who you're like, oh, that guy's special. You know, Riley could be their Ekblad, I guess. Their goaltending can be fantastic. I know it hasn't been, and Toronto's hasn't been either, but can be fantastic. And then, yeah, elite guys at the top end. So, yes, they're of similar blueprints. And I guess, you know, we had Chris Pronger on who said, you know, this is a team that needs to figure out when to run and gun and when not to, and Toronto fits that mold too. So it's kind of a matter of which team figures out how to defend first at this point.
Well, you look at Sasha Barkov, and I think he's really underappreciated. And Chris Pronger said that, you know, throughout his career, he'd probably be a top three center if he played with him that he's ever played with in his career. So that, you know, you put that in perspective, that's how good he is. And it's not just on the offensive, and he's a very talented offensive player, probably one of the most skilled players in the NHL. But the key to Sasha Barkov is that he plays good team defense. He plays good defense. He's killing penalties. He's got a good stick. He pays attention to the details. And he plays a good 200-foot game.
He's a salty guy. Do you like him more than Matthews?
No.
No, I don't either.
Matthews can score. You know, Matthews is a future Rocket Richard guy, maybe this year.
Yeah.
And Barkov's a future Selke guy who also is going to put up, you know, 85, 90 points.
Yeah, you easily can make the case either way. Like, if someone were to say Barkov, I wouldn't be like, you fool. But I do think that Matthews is special. Like, I think he's one of the handful of guys who can do things that no one else on Earth can. Barkov, you know, he gets a lot of that Selke love, but first off, I don't know how much hockey, Florida hockey, everyone is watching. I think his numbers are good, and he's pretty good defensively, but even talking to Pronger again yesterday, he was like, you know, he's another guy who still needs to learn when to go and when not to. I hardly think of him out of the Patrice Bergeron mold just yet.
Yeah, they've been fun to watch. I think we all know Florida's going to be a tough out. The Leafs play them 3 more times in the next 2 and a bit months. So, listen, they're going to have their opportunity. Those games are paramount at this point. And it's funny, the Leafs played Florida for the first time this year on Rogers Hometown Hockey 2 Sundays ago, and it was arguably their worst game of the year. Everyone would just sort of joke that they were out in South Beach maybe the night before because, what, they were trailing 6-1. They, you know, Anderson got pulled. It was an unmitigated disaster by all accounts. And I believe that's when Mitch Marner went as far as to say we hung Freddie out to dry and we just sort of, you know, assumed he would pick up the slack for us, and it didn't work out on this night. It's funny. You hate to think about those games in January, you know, when we're going to look at the standings in April, but that's one of those games you might want to circle. You know, the Leafs went in there 48 hours ahead of the game. They had time to prepare. They were rested. They had their starting goalie. Everything had lined up. You know, they were on a nice streak. Everything had lined up to be, this is a big game for us, and they...
Nothing coaches hate more than that, than giving you a little bit of wiggle room and saying, you're professionals, I trust that you'll take care of yourself with this extra time, and then getting slapped in the face with it and giving that performance.
Yeah, they went to Florida on Friday, had Friday and Saturday night there, waiting, resting, preparing, theoretically, for Sunday's game.
Well,
didn't work.
The thing about playing guilty, it's usually the next day. So if you go on a Friday, it hits you 2 days later. So
you're not wrong.
That's the old veteran move there. So if they
just
went on Friday
the before the game, and you're better off.
Yeah. And let's be clear, we don't know what was done and what wasn't
absolutely
done.
Not.
But my point is, they didn't play the game they wanted to play, and that was a real letdown. And it's funny, after the Chicago game, Sheldon Keefe described his team as immature, and that's you know, aside from calling them quitters or cowards, calling them immature is probably the next worst thing. You don't want to be called immature.
But like, they are a bunch of 21, 22, 23.
But it's basically saying you're it's basically saying you're unprofessional.
Yeah, fine. You know, and you're it's not fine to hear that about yourself. But if you're acting that way, and, you know, I think there are some of us who have that concern about this team. Is the core of the group, you know, got some entitlement, got some immaturity issues? We'll see.
It's interesting. So, I mean, Florida's going to be a tough catch for the Leafs. Then you look at Columbus, which to me is one of the greatest stories of the NHL this year. Dzingel, gone. Bobrovsky, gone. Panarin, we just talked about as a possible MVP candidate, gone. Duchesne, down in Nashville, gone. They lose four key parts, and they actually seem better. And not just that. Seven guys are on the IR right now, including their number one goalie in Jonas Korpisalo. It's unbelievable what John Tortorella is doing. We're going to be able to ask Jarmo Kekalainen about his team. How real do you look at the Columbus Blue Jackets? Is this smoke and mirrors, or is this a team that Tortorella is squeezing every little ounce out of them, and they are a bona fide team ready to make noise like you predicted they would last year?
Well, I'm looking at their IR right now. They got Dubinsky still there, Anderson and Milano, Teixeira, Korpisalo, all these guys that are key contributors to their lineup. They're not playing. So that just shows how much overcoaching Tortorella has to do and how much everyone's buying into their system. So, you know, a lot of teams have the system, but it's another thing for players to buy in and actually believe in what he's trying to do and what he's trying to teach. So, that's the prime example of a great coach. There's a lot of good coaches in the NHL, but he's a great coach because he gets every single ounce out of every player. And a team, when you're losing that much offense, you know, to sit there at 2.5 goals against a game, second in the NHL, and your penalty kills at 82%, that just shows how much that this team is buying in. So do they have the depth to go, you know, a couple rounds? Maybe not. Am I going to call them to beat Tampa Bay this year? I don't think so.
But are you calling them a playoff team?
But they're a playoff team, and you know, we'll talk to their GM here in a couple minutes and see if he's going to be adding at the deadline. But to lose all those parts and have these injuries, it's amazing what's going on this year in Columbus.
The concern for me is just that it is amazing. They've been incredible. Just that they're so overextended, right? They, as you were mentioning off the top there, David, like they seem to be getting every last drop available out of this team, which, you know, Jack Adams comes to mind there, where you're a coach getting the most out of your roster. But at some point, if things go wrong and you're getting the most out of your roster, you know, you can take a step back. And so I do have some concern about them, you know, being a playoff team, or a little more skepticism about them being a playoff team. But I certainly think that, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for doing what they've done in the face of losing so much talent. And I do think that there's, you know, if they can continue to play like this, they might be able to squeak it.
I don't know if you guys believe in karma, and maybe there's a little hockey karma being played out here for the Columbus Blue Jackets, their fan base, their coach, their GM. And what I mean by that is there was a lot of pressure last year. You're going to lose Panarin. He wants to go down to Florida. He wants to go to New York. Bobrovsky's already signed with Florida. He wants to go to Florida. We know that. And there was the temptation, I'm sure, to just pull the chute last year and say, guys, we need to get some assets. We got to get some picks here. Walk into that dressing room and say to guys, I know you'd like to go to the playoffs this year. We might still get there, but I got to trade these top assets and get what we can get.
But
he did the opposite. Yeah. He brought in Duchesne, brought in Dzingel. He said, I'm going to make a more serious run. And now the karma's maybe paying off, that instead of this team being a bottom two or three team, here they are.
Yeah, but I think that's part of, you know, the market in Columbus, where you got to sell hope. You can't just say, hey, we're going to tank, because if you're not producing, you're not doing well, I don't think the fans are going to come out. And I think they've sort of been, you know, trying to find that next big superstar, you know, since Nash left, and they traded for Jeff Carter. So I think with that success that they've been having these last couple of years, if they add a couple pieces, I think it's going to be a more attractive destination, you know, for some of these free agents to come to. So it's good for them, because they don't have the lure of trying to get these big names during free agency. They're doing it all by committee. They're doing it with good coaching, good goaltending, good teamwork.
Also just speaks to the value of trying to win, to me. Mm-hmm. Like, showing your guys that, like, hey, we want to get you in big games. We are trying to win. We're not trying to be bad. I think that has value for the guys who are still there, right? They've been in the playoffs. They went two rounds last year. They felt what it's like, and I think that helps you get better.
Yeah, I think these are good points, guys. And we're going to see them tonight, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, the last edition before All-Star break. It's Columbus and Winnipeg. Coverage starts at 7:30 Eastern over on Sportsnet, or actually make that 7 Eastern over on Sportsnet, with Jeff Merrick, Elliot Friedman, and Brian Burke. By the way, this goalie, Elvis Merzlikins, this is a great story. This guy has this great post-game celebration where he jumps into Foligno's arms after every win. If you haven't had a chance to see that, it's better than the Storm Surge, actually. It's a lot of fun.
No, it's not.
Low bar to clear.
Well, Elvis started his career. I want to say he started 0-4-4 his NHL career, and it was thinking, oh, my goodness, they can't win with this guy in net. And now he's, I believe, won his last 5 or 6 starts. So it's a great story brewing in Columbus. And by the way, they now stand 3 points clear of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So Toronto, again, do have some work in front of them. And it doesn't get easy for Toronto as well, guys. They come out of the break, and they're on the road in Nashville and then in Dallas.
Yeah, that's a tough way to start, but it's almost like a unifying trip sort of thing. Like, okay, we've all been away. We've been away from each other. We're all going to get back in the hotel on the road and pull together for a couple of games. And those are teams that are good teams, you know, so you're not going up to face Detroit right away. So you kind of you have to be on your game. I actually think it sets them up pretty well to sort of snap back into real hockey right out of the gate.
Well, I don't mind playing on the road because that means they necessarily can't bag skate you before you get to the game. But it'll lighten up a little bit after that. You know, they got Anaheim coming up in the coming weeks. Montreal, who's starting to turn a corner. Ottawa. So they have a chance to get some points and get back into this race. But no one's doing them any favors. And I think with this Toronto Maple Leafs team, we're past the point of them just stumbling in and just, you know, trying to get past the first round. If they're going to get in, they have to be firing all cylinders, and they got to try to win 2-3 rounds.
Yeah.
So that sets the table for what is the final night of the NHL season leading into the All-Star break. It's Winnipeg at Columbus and Detroit at Minnesota are the only two games on tap, and then it's official. Players are on break or players are heading to St. Louis for this year's edition of the All-Star game. The skills taking place on Friday, the game itself taking place on Saturday, and we will have an All-Star edition of Take Your Pick coming up in a little while. Again, we have Jarmo Kekalainen, and he'll be joining us to talk everything Columbus in a little while. Up next, though, I believe it is Billy Jaffe from Nesson. He'll be joining us in just a matter of moments as we break down the Boston Bruins. Are they happy where they are? Are they going to be adding at the trade deadline? Is there any concern or hand-wringing going on in Beantown just because they know they're staring down potentially the Penguins, the Capitals, the Lightning, the Leafs, the Panthers? It's not going to be an easy road out of the East. We'll discuss that coming up with Billy Jaffe on Hockey Central.
Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back. Hockey Central. Great to have you along. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, David Amber over on NHL Network, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as well as Sportsnet 360 for those who want to see what everyone's wearing today, including our esteemed producer, Matt Marchese, will be joining us with Matty Has Questions in about an hour's time. So many good teams in the NHL, and maybe none better, you could make the case, than the Boston Bruins, currently sitting second overall in the National Hockey League, and the beat goes on. Another nice win last night, and we welcome in from Nesson, our friend, and a guy I've known for quite a bit of time now. Billy Jaffe joins us. Billy, how are you?
David, I am wonderful. I think we should get back to the wardrobe question, comments. I'd like to know if this is all approved by the esteemed Deb Berman, is what you guys have wearing.
I don't think my cardigan has been approved by Deb. I might be the exception here.
She was banging on the glass. So, yeah.
I got to turn this on. All right, I'll give you an analysis. What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
We're doing well, Billy. It's good to have you on the show, and always love listening to you over on Nesson. And you know, we were just having a bit of a debate. Listen, the optimist would say the Bruins are rolling on like the Bruins do. Here they are, second overall in the NHL. And maybe the pessimist in Beantown might be like, you know, Tampa's looking like Tampa from last year. There's been some inconsistency with the Bruins. They keep blowing these 3-goal leads. They keep losing in shootouts. You're there front and center. Give us the pulse of the team in Beantown. What is the feel of this team right now, Billy?
Now, pretty much what you just went over, all possible scenarios, although lately it has been one of a little bit of concern, a little bit, I would say dismay may be a strong word, but, you know, in the moment of losing 2-3 goal leads in a week, One to Pittsburgh, and then before that to Philadelphia. There's that feeling of despair a bit, like, come on, guys. Like, oh, no, the sky's falling. That's the way hockey fans are, maybe just fans are in general. But you get concerned because you say this is a wonderful core group of players here, and they can't allow this to happen, right? And I'm not just putting it on the core of, let's say, five, six, seven guys. But, you know what I mean? Those are the faces of the franchise, and those are the ones you look to stem that tide. I do think that this team is still very good. I do think that this team is legit. I think that their structure under Bruce Cassidy and their defensive structure is what keeps them in just so many games all the time, and it's not a fluke. It's real. But I also do think that we have seen them in the last month, 6 weeks, David, that have been in a bit of a malaise, whether it's a Stanley Cup hangover type of thing, appearance hangover, or, I mean, look, St. Louis, did you guys think that they'd be this good right now?
No.
I don't know. I'm so impressed with them. Mm-hmm. I am so impressed. They haven't seen the goal through this kind of lull. The Bruins lull, they still find a way to get points, but it hasn't felt as good as early on. They've got to get better. They know it. This break couldn't have come at a more perfect time for them.
A player that interests me a ton on Boston is Jake DeBrusk, just because you got that top line there who's obviously, you know, the best line in the league, I would say, or one of the best lines in the league. But after that, it's, you know, scoring is not as prevalent as maybe some of the other top teams in their second line. Talk about Jake DeBrusk and just where he fits into this Boston Bruins team and what sort of role you think he'll play for them down the stretch and into playoffs.
He'll play a very important role. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch last night or not, but he had a few explosive strides that, you know, he got a breakaway in the first period. He had a goal in the third period with not just an explosive stride, but an explosive shot, too. You know, he is known to be just an incredibly streaky in his short career in the National Hockey League. He ended up with 27 last year, and they'd love to see him get back to that 27 number. I believe, if I remember correctly, he's at 15 now with last night's goal. You know, so he's got a chance. What do we have, 30, 31 games left? But it hasn't been enough overall this year. And with that said, he's still an important piece. Now, last night, the interesting thing with Justin will be this. Who does he play with eventually? Does he stay with Charlie Coyle, which he had the last couple of games? And in the right side was Anders Bjork. And that gave that line a different vibe, a different feel, because even though Krejci came back into the lineup, he had different line mates than normally. It's DeBrusk and Krejci together. DeBrusk has the ability, when he's going and he's playing interior, he has the ability to make a big difference for this team. He gives them a legit high-end scoring threat on another line, and proven, and like again, 27 is pretty darn good. But at times this year, it's been kind of very noticeable, and then other times, Borny, not noticeable. And that's part, I think it's part of being a young player in the league, figuring out that consistency factor.
Do you have any insight to why the Bruins are 0-for-7 in the shootouts and 0-for-5 in OT this season?
I don't. Do you?
Next question. Yeah.
I think you guys being former players, we all know the difference about taking a shootout penalty shot versus an in-game breakaway, right? One game is theater and everybody, the attention is on you being the shootout or penalty shot. The other one is literally heat of the moment. You're getting chased and, oh my God, I'm not thinking, right? And you rely on instinct. And for some reason, the Bruins don't seem to allow they're good in the instinctual part of it, in the breakaways in game. But when that moment, the light shines on them, which is odd considering how much of such an experienced guy, you know, guys that they have, but they seem to think too much and they seem to slow down too much. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, do you agree with me or not? There's very few players in this league that can be effective when they really slow down and they do the serpentine route and they bring it not to a standstill, but close to it. I feel like players get too close in that regard, or they give away what they're going to do. The Patrick Canes are all world. They can get away with it. But the Bruins seem to have tried that an awful lot. It doesn't seem to work. The one time the Pastrnak scored, he busted his butt. He came down almost like on a regular breakaway, and he was able to make it happen. So I do think that's the big thing, is that I think, does it sound too simple, but they think too much versus just letting it go. And I think that that's where they're at.
The good news is in the playoffs, there is no shootout. There is no 3-on-3
yes.
unless both teams have two guys in the box. So they don't have to really concern themselves with that. It's all about just getting those W's, and they've done a lot of that this year. I have maybe a two-part question. Tuukka Rask on the IR, it looks like another head injury based on the Bemstrom, you know, shot to the head.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things. Why wasn't there a response by the Bruins there? Well, I was surprised because I thought it was one of those kind of sneaky, dirty plays, even though Bemstrom doesn't have a reputation. I just thought, like, that's an avoidable play to me. Mm-hmm. No pushback from the Bruins in that game. And also Rask's condition, more importantly, how is he from, if there's any update you can give us?
No real update, no concrete, except, you know, Bruce Cassidy talked, David, about that he thinks he's going to be fine. He looked pretty good at the celebration they had for him the other day at home. When he got a replica, what was it, Metallica drum set, you know, as part of his 500th NHL game, and he got the big goalie stick that was, you know, silver, and it looked good. And he looked fine on the ice. I mean, look, we all know that these head injuries, they take time. You got to heal, whether it's minor or major. We know that they're unknown, so to speak. But the word is that he's going to be good. He's going to be fine. That's awesome. With regard to the response.
Oh, sorry. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Right.
I have a question for you just about the broadcast that you guys have there and Nesson. What a fantastic job you guys do. You know, I've been fascinated watching Jack Edwards in the brick, and I think that the way they call the game is unique among the, you know, anyone in the National Hockey League. I can't think of anyone who does it like them. What's it like working with those guys? And I will say that around the league, they would be known as more, I would say, home team leaning than other broadcasts. And I want to know if that's conscious or something that just comes out as you know, being around the team all the time.
Well, honestly, look, they're fantastic to work with. Can't really speak for them how they come off, if that's how it comes off. I think Jack has, well, I know Jack has a unique style. He works his ass off. He prepares, et cetera. He does great stuff. I think Brick is one of the best in the biz. His intuition is fantastic, picks up a lot of things, always fun to talk with, has just a real good take on it. How they call the game, I mean, look, Jack brings definitely an effort that is passionate for the black and gold, Justin. And that's, you know, that's his style. You know, we have, you know, me doing the pregame, the intermission, the postgame. I feel like we look at things, you know, very much through a full, you know, clear glass. And we talk when they're real good, and we talk when they're not so really bad or not so good. I do find, Marnie, in Boston, and I've worked in a couple of other markets, you can't, you know, like what I do, and again, I can't speak for anybody else about how they want to call the game, but with regard to me, Justin, you can't BS people and in Boston or in New England. They just get, they see through it, you know, and they want to hear the realness of it. And I do think, though, play-by-play in color is, well, play-by-play is different than what color and what we do as you know, pregame, intermission, and post analysts. And I think that if you look around the league, that there would be a lot of broadcasts that, I always called it, you know, it's a three-hour marketing window for your team. That's what it is. And they call it with definitely a flavor geared towards the home team's sweaters. And, you know, some people love it. I'm sure some don't always. But these guys are a blast to work with. And I the Nesson broadcast, we get pushed a lot, and we push people an awful lot, our producers and stuff, to really bring what we end up hoping is a great telecast, because we put a lot of work into it.
Billy, you're known as the Bruins insider, and Torrey Krug is having another spectacular season. Do you see him being in a Bruins uniform next season?
I think this for an insider, which I don't know if I really am.
Put you on the hot seat there.
This is a lame answer. This is a lame answer. There's a chance, and I just think that, you know, he wants to stay. The deal's got to be right. I mean, I'm paraphrasing what he has said recently. He wants to remain a Bruin. He loves to remain a Bruin. As long as the deal is fair, he would love to remain a Bruin. What does that mean when it's all said and done? I don't know, bud. I just don't know, because, you know, the Bruins have such a good way about how they go with dealing with their players, and the players seem to respect that way, that, yes, everybody wants to see him signed, but then everything has to come into play, and, you know, What other factors are going to happen? Does Zdeno Chara come back, you know, for another year? Remember, he's on a one-year deal. You're entering the last year of a deal for a guy like David Krejci, who just came back after missing a couple games, and you saw how sublime his hands are and his patience is in front of the net last night with his goal. What do you do, you know, with him? What about some other guys? Earlier, Borny mentioned Jake DeBrusk. You know, he's up. So the pieces have got to fit. We've seen guys like Marchand, Pasternak, McAvoy take different deals than many people thought they would get to stay a Boston Bruin. If that can be worked out, yeah, he'll stay. It will be less than he would get, Stewie, on the open market. It will be. There's no doubt about it. There's a couple of teams out there that you would look at that would say, geez, they could fit a guy who's a 50-point guy regularly. Who, hey, how about the fight he got in the other day against Patrick Hornquist against Pittsburgh? I mean, that was a leadership moment. David, you asked about no response against Columbus.
Yeah.
They responded against Pittsburgh because they got their backs up against the wall. Mm-hmm. They did. And they said, you know what? We didn't do enough before. Now, granted, it's too long of an answer to go into the whole Columbus thing, but sure. They didn't know what happened right away. They went to the room. They saw. They heard about it. They tried to get Benstrom to engage. He wouldn't. He repeatedly turned down that. Finally, the Bruins moved on past that response and got back to what they thought was playing better hockey, even though they didn't win, they played better. But the Pittsburgh game, Krug responded, the Bruins responded, and that was a leadership moment there. So long way of getting back to Stewie's original question. I hope so. I think there's a decent chance, but there's still a lot of room out there, a lot of days out there before this may get signed, just given the fact the Bruins have a lot of important pieces to keep fit into place to where deals aren't always what people think they're going to be, and they have to make sure they can get a lot of guys signed.
And they've done a great job. Don Sweeney has been exceptional. Yeah, I mean, David Krejci's their highest paid player at 7+. And think about the star lineup that he puts out on the ice. You know, the number they got McAvoy at, the number they got Pasternak at, unbelievable so far. And you're right, that might have to change where Torrey Krug can come in, because he's not going to be $2 million more than any other player on the Bruins lineup. We know that much. So, Billy, great stuff as always. Enjoy the All-Star break. Hope you have a little bit of downtime and you can enjoy time with your wife and kids.
We will. There's going to be a little youth hockey involved in that, partner. Nice. You know about that well. And then there's actually going to be a little getaway time, which is somewhat unheard of. I don't have to – didn't have any NHL Network work. So, yes, I'm going to get away. And I did turn the TV on. Two things. One, thank you forever, whomever put up that old picture of me with a lot of hair left.
High school grad photo.
That's close to it. And two, I I love the fact you guys are all in dark clothes. And that cardigan, Borny, let's discuss.
Okay? Oh, I think this is Mr. Rogers through and through. This is great.
Billy, great stuff as always. We enjoy the work over on NESN. Hope to cross paths with you soon, my friend.
Be well, guys. Thanks a lot.
There's Billy Jaffe over at NESN breaking down the Boston Bruins, and they're going to be a tough out. They're going to be one of those top teams that you're going to have to go through if you plan to get to the Stanley Cup final, and they are the defending Eastern Conference champions. All right, so we're rolling towards All-Star break, guys. Up next, take your pick, All-Star edition. I put these two guys on the hot seat with a number of questions, All-Star related. It's all coming up, so keep it locked here. This is Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back, Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, NHL Network, and Sportsnet 360. Hope you're enjoying your Wednesday, the last day of the NHL regular season games before All-Star break, which brings us to this. Take your pick, All-Star edition. Gentlemen, you ready? Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart?
Ready to go.
Yes.
All right. Who could possibly take down Connor McDavid as the NHL's fastest skater at the skills competition on Friday?
Do we know the names in the event yet?
This is the problem. We don't. But I mean, who could be? I mean, who do you think actually has
Mike
a chance?
Gardner's coming back.
Mike Gardner. Yeah.
Is there anyone, when you look at it, is there anyone right now who's an all-star that you go could give him a run for his money in this event?
I have a weird theory on McDavid and speed, and it's something that Jeff Merrick says, is that he's very, very fast. He's one of the fastest guys in the leagues, but I believe there are players as fast as him. It's how sudden he is, how quick he is. He's at that speed so much quicker than everyone else that makes him so fast. So, yes, I think there are people. I don't know if they're in the game necessarily.
I think he wins this competition even if he's holding a puck. So I think if he does the fastest skater holding a puck.
Oh, my God, that would be wild.
I think he was still one. He's that fast.
That would be wild if they said everyone else to skate. McDavid, yeah. You actually have a puck on your stick. That's actually great. I like that. I thought maybe one of you guys would say Kendall Coyne Schofield.
I did think of the name, I'll be honest.
She was kicking butt last year. Accuracy shooting event. Who would you think would be the favorite to win this? And they shoot at these LED.
I'm going to take Austin Matthews. I just think the way he's been placing the puck this year, it's pretty clear he can hit his mark and he gets it off pretty quick.
Hughes is going, right?
Quinn?
Yeah.
Quinn Hughes.
So I think it's a younger man's game. They pay more attention to that stuff now with all the gadgets and all the shooting targets they have with the minor hockey players. He's one of the youngest guys there. I think he wins it.
And we'll see if he's... We don't, again, know. The event lists haven't been named. I'm going to say Mark Scheifele there because I think he's a 20% shooter in the National Hockey League when there's actually a goalie in net. So that could be interesting. Shea Weber clearly would be the favorite going in for hardest shot. Is there anyone else there you think could rival him, could challenge him?
You know, for me right now, I'm just racking my brain about which guys specifically are in, because there are guys around the league, like Ryan Pulock on the Islanders, who bombs it. He won't be in the game. Chara's not in the game. I'm not sure who in the game.
I got a guy for you.
Who you got?
John Carlson.
He's got heat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never thought of him, like I think of Weber, where it's just like shooting it through the net.
I think it's Weber's running away with it.
All right. Will a single hit be thrown during the three-on-three games? Will anyone hit someone?
Didn't you almost get in a fight in an All-Star game?
Yeah, I almost got into a fight in an OHL All-Star game.
Why?
Someone Mark Mathot hit me in front of the net. And I said, hey, I had There's a late no night last night. Please do not hit me, because if you hit me again, we're going to have a big problem.
And what happened?
He didn't hit me again.
So do you think there'll be a hit? And now, bear in mind, before you answer, Matthew Tkachuk is there.
Yeah.
If there is someone who doesn't give a hoot about, you know, it's understood to not be a hitting situation.
I just think no. I would love to be wrong. I would absolutely love to be wrong, but probably not.
Is there money on the line again this year?
There's $1 million for stakes for the winning team.
Well, if I'm playing for $1 million, someone's going over the top ropes.
So there's going to be a hit, you think. How many times do we hear the song Gloria played on Friday and Saturday? I put the over-under at 5.
Oh, just way, way over. way, like 55, and 55, I still might have taken the over.
So you're taking the
I'm over? Taking the over also.
You're both taking the over. Oh, gosh, I hope not. Oh, my goodness. Will Rick Tocchet fan the flames of that whole Calgary-Edmonton feud and say, first three men up, Draisaitl, McDavid, Tkachuk?
I don't think so.
I say no. Because he wants them to kill each other, because that's good for Arizona when they get back.
Oh,
yeah. Playoff race.
But you don't think that would fan the flames where McDavid looks up and he's got to deal with Tkachuk? And, all right.
I think not.
Do we see a lacrosse-style goal scored in this game?
I'm going to say yes, and from in front of the net. I'm going to say someone picks the puck up and throws it in the net from in front of the net at some point here.
I say yes also, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's become that's become a thing now, right, this whole lacrosse goal?
And, like, Matthews did it from in front of the net one game this year against Vegas, where he picked it up and went just forehand and kind of tossed it on net. So it's doable.
On Twitter, Jordan Binnington challenged Justin Bieber to make 10 breakaways on him, and he said if Bieber scored even one time on those 10 breakaways, he would dye his hair platinum blonde. Bieber on Twitter responded and said, let's do this, but let's give money to charity, which I think is a great great move by the Biebs. If Bieber does show up in St. Louis to go toe-to-toe with Jordan Binnington, and he does get 10 breakaways, does he score a goal?
You have a stance? I have a hard stance on this.
I say he scores at least one.
At least one.
Me too.
Because remember, Pronger says he keeps his head down, so he's not going to be intimidated by the goalie. He's going to do the same move he'll do in beer league. One's going to go in. It's going to trickle in.
For me, it's like, have you ever played beer league against a goalie so bad that they, like, bite on the wrong fake or they don't bite and they're just where they shouldn't be? Like, when the talent levels are so different, I think that, like, Binnington's just not going to know what to expect, and he'll get some weird changeup that'll go under his arm or something. Also, I have no interest in watching Justin Bieber take 10 breakaways. That sounds like a seven-minute event.
10 minutes, yeah.
Don't sleep on the Biebs. He was at the All-Star game, the 100th anniversary of the league. The All-Star game was in Los Angeles, where they trotted out the 100 greatest players of all time, and he was there, and he was playing in a celebrity game. And I granted it was a celebrity game, but there were former NHLers there. In fact, Chris Pronger was on the ice, and there's a great shot on Twitter where he sandwiches Bieber and knocks his helmet off his head almost. Bieber could skate a bit. Do not sleep on Bieber.
I don't want to watch any player take 10 breakaways. That's painful.
So this isn't for you.
Yes.
Let's wrap it up with this. Who is going to win the All-Star MVP? You know, you get the Gretzky's and the Leafs, but you've also got the Brock Bessers and Wayne Simmonds.
Got to be a St. Louis player in terms of, like, running favorites, because if they're even halfway as good as the next guy, they're getting the vote.
Well, the team's got to get through, though, right? Because what's going to happen is going to be Central versus Pacific, Atlantic versus Metro, then the two winners.
This is built for a St. Louis winner, because the Pacific, you'd think, be maybe not the best. Huh? They have McDavid. Either way, I'm taking David Perron. Perron is my answer.
Perron, okay.
Austin Matthews.
Ooh, Austin Matthews, that would be good.
What a homer. What a pandering
easy
pick
stew
for the audience.
Easy
I'm
going to
say
easy stew.
Patrick Kane. Never sleep on Patrick Kane. This guy can do everything. He is magic. So All-Star Weekend is coming up. Friday night, the Skills in St. Louis, and of course Saturday, the 3-on-3 tournament. As well, in the Skills, you're going to have the Elite Canada versus U.S. Elite Women going toe-to-toe. That's going to be a lot of fun. You know, there'll be some bragging rights on the line there as well. Another hour, Hockey Central, coming up in moments.
It's Hockey Central with David Amber, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Hour two of Hockey Central as we wind towards the NHL All-Star break in St. Louis coming up on Friday and Saturday. Full coverage for you on CBC and Sportsnet. Tonight, we've got our last pre-All-Star edition of Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Winnipeg, what's going on with the Jets? They are flailing of late. They go in to take on a very good Columbus team. And in a matter of moments, we will have on Jarmo Kekalainen, the GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are on an epic roll right now. Five straight wins and ensconced into a playoff position as we speak in the Eastern Conference. So yesterday, guys, you guys baseball fans at all?
Yes.
Yeah?
Sam.
You got a team?
Oh, okay. I'm a Jays guy.
Jays guy, okay. Yeah. Stewie?
Should I say Astros? I'm an Astros
no.
guy.
I like wearing the Blue Jays hats. That's a bit. That's okay. about it.
So Stu likes the fashion. Justin and I like the actual game. And yesterday was a pretty nice moment for Derek Jeter. No surprise. 99.7% yeses on the ballot. One guy said, no, you're not going to we don't look at you as Hall of Famer. I'd love to know who that is.
What a fascinating thing to be that guy. Do you think he's like, oh, man, or maybe he likes the attention?
Same thing happened in the NBA about, what was it, 10 years ago, 12 years ago? It was probably longer. In fact, it was 2001. Allen Iverson was the almost unanimous MVP of the league, and one gentleman, I believe it might have been Fred Hickman, I better be sure I'm right about this before I throw that out there. So one person said, he's not the MVP of the league, so he was one vote away from being unanimous. So Derek Jeter is going into the Hall of Fame, and on top of that, Larry Walker from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, in his last opportunity to get in, got 76% plus. You need 75% to get in. So he had six votes more than he needed to get in, which is an incredible story on his last chance to get in to the Hall of Fame. So congratulations to Larry Walker. And maybe some of our viewers aren't as familiar or listeners aren't as familiar. Larry Walker is known as a great baseball player going to the Hall of Fame. He's a pretty darn good goalie as well. He did get cut twice, though, by the Regina Pats, and that's when he said, you know, screw this, I'm out of hockey. But his first love was to be a goalie in the National Hockey League. And there's a lot of stories like this where guys give up one sport, go to another. Tom Glavine's a great story. He was drafted earlier in the draft than Luke Robitaille, who's a Hall of Famer, and he decided to go in the NHL draft, and Tom Glavine ended up becoming a Hall of Fame baseball pitcher with the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, I remember running track and field in high school, and I was just doing it to stay in shape for hockey. And it was my draft year in a couple months, and schools are coming up to me saying, well, no, you need to quit that hockey stuff and play football. And I'm like, well, I'm probably going to be a first rounder. They're like, we don't care. You need to play football.
Really? Yeah. Looking for the late career turnaround,
eh? I was like 242 officially, like running the 100-meter
down. Have you ever had an official proper weight?
No, only on paper.
All right.
All right, I just want to clarify, I had all my facts wrong. I'm having one of those senior moments, even though I'm not a senior.
Larry Walker didn't get in?
No, Walker's in. Walker's in. It was Fred Hickman. It wasn't Allen Iverson. I messed up my name. It was Shaquille O'Neal was the MVP, except for one vote, and it was Fred Hickman who abstained from voting for Shaquille O'Neal. So there you go. Instead, he voted for Allen Iverson.
Twitter police got you?
So there wasn't, I know, I just went and looked it up. So there was an Iverson connection to it. I just had the whole story backwards. So bottom line is Larry Walker's in as well as Derek Jeter, which made us think, are there any players right now in the National Hockey League, if they were to retire tomorrow, active players, and they just retire tomorrow, have they done enough to get in to the Hockey Hall of Fame? So, you know, Matt Marchese, our esteemed producer, put together a pretty darn good list, an exhaustive list, and let's run through them because I want your yeses and nos. Some of them are no-brainers, and some of them we're going to have a little bit of a debate on. So, again, the premise is if the player retired tomorrow, have they done enough to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame? Let's start with some no-brainers. Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In. Alexander Ovechkin.
Yes.
In. Evgeny Malkin.
Yes.
In. Patrick Kane.
He's in mine.
Yes.
In. Okay. Gets a bit more interesting here. Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
1,600 plus games. He's closing in on 1,500 points, an Olympic gold. He's won an MVP, six-time All-Star. arguably one of the greatest playmakers in the history of the game. I think it's a no-brainer. I think he's in, but what do you guys think?
I say yeah, just based on the six All-Stars and the Olympic gold. That's some pretty good hardware for me.
I mean, longevity matters to me, too. Yes. That's also a no-brainer for me. I do want to ask one thing here, David, for clarification. When we're saying these guys are like All-Stars, we don't mean actually going to an All-Star game, right? You mean the end-of-season All-Star teams that the professional hockey writers would have selected, I believe, because some years there aren't All-Star teams.
These are all-star games. It's selection. But regardless, I mean, Joe Thornton.
It's just not relevant to Thornton, just generally.
Yeah. Okay, so we're all agreeing.
Well, we talked about longevity, so why not Pat Verbeek? He had 1,400 games.
Well, we're talking about the active players. If you want to start making a case for all the guys who aren't in the thing, we can do a whole other segment on that.
No, okay, continue.
I don't disagree.
Free Pat Verbeek.
Pat Verbeek is one of the great oversights, and hopefully the day will come when he does get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Sometimes these guys just have to wait it out, and that's been the case for Pat Verbeek. So what about Patrick Marleau? You used the L word, longevity, to describe Joe Thornton. He's a two-time Olympic gold winner. He's a three-time All-Star, and he's played, when all is said and done, if he can squeeze another season or and a half out, he's going to pass, Gordie Howe as the all-time most games played. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but bottom line is he's played 1,700-plus games, has 1,100-plus points. Is Patrick Marleau a Hall of Famer?
I'm going to say yeah. The tiebreaker for me is the two Olympic golds, because, it's not the NHL Hall of Fame, it's the Hockey Hall of Fame, and your international career is relevant. And, what he's done in the NHL is, 1,700 games, as you mentioned, just a bajillion points. And there aren't a ton of personal accolades, and they have, no Stanley Cup. Those things do hurt. But I think in the vast picture of things, Marleau's career and body of work it's special.
I think if you don't have the Stanley Cup, in my opinion, I think you got to have 50 goals. So he never had 50 goals. He didn't win any major hardware. Olympic golds is very high on my list, but not enough for me. I say no. What about you?
I think he's got a little bit of work to do. Well, when I say work to do, I'm not sure.
Got to play another 10 years.
Check in 10 years. I'm right on the fence, and I'm being wimpy here. I'm a bit on the fence with Patrick Marleau. I think he's been an exceptional player. I wouldn't say he was ever the most dominant player for any stretch of games. I think his longevity is admirable. He's been a great player for a long time. I would really love to have had a Stanley Cup beside his name the way Ron Francis did. And Francis, I think, had a few, right? So I would say he has I'm a little gun shy to put him in at this point. Eric Staal. This is tough because, as we know, Eric Staal still has a lot of left in the tank. He's going to be at the All-Star game. It'll be his sixth All-Star appearance. He's won an Olympic gold. He's won a world championship. He's won a Stanley Cup, 400-plus goals, 1,000-plus points. Eric Staal, Hall of Famer.
We earlier when we discussed this, I think it was a couple of years, maybe a month ago, I said no, and I'm sticking with that, but it's not that it can't be changed yet. He still has time to go in his career, and I can still change my mind on that one. But
right now, if you retired, no.
I just have never thought of him as one of the game's few best players for many years.
I say yes because he's got the cup, and I think that he's playing at a high level at a late age. People thought when he went to the Rangers, he didn't have the great playoffs with the Rangers that he was done, but he came back with a 42-goal season. He's an all-star now. Yes.
Yeah, 40-goal season just, last year, right?
Yeah.
Ryan Getzlaf, this is another great one. 1,000-plus games, almost 1,000 points, Stanley Cup, two-time Olympic gold, Hall of Famer if he were to retire today.
I say yes because he was part of the 2003 draft.
So. I was just going to say.
The best draft of all time.
So. Seeing a connection here.
I say yes, too.
So you gets off over Staal. Which way do you go on Staal,
David? Staal. I'll say yes on Staal.
Yes on Staal. Yes on Getzlaf.
Yeah.
You hear that, Patrick Marleau? Amber doesn't like you.
And I love Patrick Marleau. He's a great guy.
I know.
This
I'm
is
teasing.
A very... difficult.
I know it is very subjective. I think that Getzlaf has been a special top of the game player for you always think of him in Anaheim. He's been synonymous there, and they won their cup. And that's a really tough one for me. I'm leaning yes. I guess
not a lot of conviction there, but these are tough. I mean, these are supposed to be tough. We're doing all forwards. We'll get to the D and goalies in a minute. Jason Spezza. 1,102 games to be exact, a two-time All-Star, 900-plus points, a great playmaker, and that's sort of the end of the resume. Jason Spezza, Hall of Famer.
No.
Plead the fifth on this one here.
I just, you look at that list, the accolades at the end of the, there are categories here. Two-time All-Star. And it, you know, no cup, no personal trophies.
Listen, no shame. He's put together an incredible career. And, you know.
Saying you're not in the Hall of Fame is not a bad, like, not a bad thing. It doesn't make you a bad player.
Yeah. I don't think the resume is there yet, but who knows how much is left in the tank for Spezza. Patrice Bergeron, 1,000-plus games, 800-plus points, the Stanley Cup, 4 Selkies, the Olympic golds, the World Cup gold. I think I'd almost would have put him up with that other group of guys we started with,
put him in
my opinion.
He's still playing. Put him in today.
Bergeron?
I say yes. And if he played for the Montreal Canadiens, I think he'd be held in the same regards as the legends there, Guy Lafleur, Larry Robinson. That's how good
Patrice Bergeron is one of the greatest players of the generation, in my opinion, because he does everything. He was held together by string during the 2013 Stanley Cup final run. And he's come close to 3 cups. They got the 1 cup. He's lost twice in the final. Exceptional. Andre Kopitar, 1,000-plus games, 900-plus points.
Wow.
Has the 2 cups, 5-time All-Star, 2-time Selke. And here's one argument you can make for Kopitar. He has been... in many respects, the most valuable offensive player on the Kings throughout his career. He's led them in points 11 of the last 12 years. He's leading them once again. And with all due respect to, you know, Jeff Carter and Dustin Brown and, you know, Drew Doughty's been an exceptional defenseman for them. And they've had a great, you know, a great group of guys around him. He has been maybe that glue guy. And to me, he's a Hall of Fame guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would like him to play a few more years and make this easier on us, but the Selke trophies make the difference to me there. He's a guy that they won the cups on the backs of a captain who played great defense in Kopitar.
This might be the most interesting one we have. Phil Kessel, 1,047 games, 368 goals, 854 points. None of those numbers jump off the page and go, you know, beat you over the head as a Hall of Famer, but he's also a 2-time Stanley Cup winner. And a lot of people in the last Stanley Cup for the Penguins, who was the MVP? Was it Crosby? I think it might have been Crosby.
Yeah.
A lot of people said, you know, Phil might have been the guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was that good. The fact that he's in that conversation for the Conn Smythe expresses how important he was on that Stanley Cup run. Phil Kessel, Hall of Famer, if he were to retire tomorrow?
No. I don't think he's a guy who could drive a team. You know, he was great as a complimentary player and had a great run with that Penguins team. But if you're not the guy, the engine of a team, I don't think you're a Hall of Famer.
I say no. I think he has a chance to maybe get to, he'll probably finish with over 1,000 points, probably closer to 1,200. I know he has the 2 cups, 3 All-Stars, but the same thing. He wasn't the go-to guy. He didn't really carry teams over the years.
Another interesting one, Nicholas Backstrom, guys, 936 games, 911 points as the Stanley Cup. And maybe more importantly, he's just one of these great playmakers, the way like Adam Oates, you know, he has a vision, you know, a Gretzky-esque vision, and he has the finisher in Ovechkin. I mean, I look at these two as, you know, I'd love to see them retire the same year, and I'd love to see them go into the Hall of Fame the same year as well.
What does one-time All-Star mean by his name? Is that possibly correct?
Yeah.
So one All-Star game?
See, that's interesting. And I'm wondering, there must have been players standing in his way because he never was a big goal scorer. And he's not a big goal scorer. And often, I imagine, you get overlooked when a guy has 40 goals or 30 goals going into the All-Star break and you have 14, even though you have 55 assists. I almost feel like Ovi has stolen some of his thunder because he's been such a great presence for all this time.
Yeah, I think that 5-year contract he just signed can make this a lot easier on us if he has some more good seasons, because right now in my mind, yeah, he's
not
a guy
enough.
Right now I do think he is someone trending to be a Hall of Famer. If his career stops today, probably not.
I think at the end of this deal, he will be. He's going to probably have, you know, 800, 850 assists. So you have 850 assists. Good career. You're a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame.
Jonathan Toews. 3-time cup winner, Conn Smythe, Selke, All-Star, Olympic gold. I think he should have been up with the other guys.
Yes. Why is he at the bottom here?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
Can't hear you.
Maddie's just like, oh, I threw him in. Corey Perry, 1,000-plus games, nearly 800 points, Stanley Cup heart rocket, 4-time All-Star, 2-time Olympic gold. This is a tough one.
I lean yes. I think he's been a really important part there, that Anaheim team. He won an MVP trophy. He's been a pivotal part of a franchise and an engine there for years.
I say yes, and then right at the bottom, piggyback Jeff Carter into there too, because I think Jeff Carter should be in there. So
yeah?
If Perry's going in there, throw Carter in also.
Wow, okay. You're being very benevolent today. What about Ilya Kovalchuk, guys? We don't have his stats or numbers, but Kovalchuk is worth a discussion because for a time there, he was one of the most dominating offensive players in the game.
It's just that one's harder for me because I think of great players in the Hall of Fame as teams that help you win Stanley Cups. And there were times even when he was putting up all his massive numbers that you weren't sure if he was a type of guy that helps your team win, you know, if he plays both ways or if he's just getting points. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer for me.
Well, if Pavel Bure's in there, why not him?
Well, sure.
He's got more goals than Pavel Bure, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Right?
He has won a Rocket Richard. Yes,
nearly. Yeah, I mean, you can do that forever with
nearly a point a game guy. You know what's really?
I
hurt?
Say yes.
You know what's really hurt his candidacy. He went to the KHL for 4 years.
Yeah, but it is the Hockey Hall of Fame. Those games are relevant.
Yes, but I don't think they're necessarily viewed the same as playing in the NHL. Right. Right?
Pavel Bure's there. You got to put Kovalchuk there.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Let's do a few defensemen and some goalies. And bottom line is, there's a lot of active players who are going to be. There's a lot to talk about here. I mean, this is an exhaustive list. Defenseman, I think this is a no-brainer. Zdeno Chara, 1,500-plus games. Stanley Cup Norris, 6-time All-Star. The heart and soul of that Bruins team.
Love Chara. Yeah. So he's one of my favorite players of all time.
Rubber stamp. Brent Burns. This is an interesting one, guys. 1,000-plus games. One of the most dynamic two-way players in the sense he could play forward and D. You know, almost 700 points. He's won a Norris. He's a 6-time All-Star. He's also beloved. And let's face facts, that is part of the equation there. And that guys are going to be given the benefit of the doubt. But when you try and remove your personal feelings about Brent Burns, who we all love as a guy, is he a Hall of Famer?
I say yes. And I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to start with a yes. Sergei Zubov sort of set the bar here. And I think I put him in the same conversation as a Zubov. You know, he's got 475 assists, doesn't have that many goals. But you mentioned the beloved part about it. 6-time All-Star, 1 Norris. I think he gets in.
He's been a very good player, but that one to me is not particularly close. Like, no disrespect to Brent Burns. Awesome player. He's a forward for a chunk of time in Minnesota. I don't know.
So last 10 years, I believe he's been the leading. He and Erik Karlsson have easily been the top two prolific scoring defensemen. Is it the fact that you don't feel he's defending enough?
Correct. Yeah, I'm not sure that he's a pillar of defense, the type of guy you win cups with. I don't know. He's been very good, an awesome career, but for me, it's a no.
Okay, so that brings us to Shea Weber. 975 games. He's played basically 100 fewer games than Burns. He has about 70 more points than, no, sorry, he has 100 fewer points than Burns in 100 fewer games, essentially. 7-time All-Star, 2-time Olympic gold. So is Shea Weber.
I think he's closer than Burns. I don't think there's
3-time Norris finalist as well.
Right. Now that's important too, but not yet. Not yet, I don't think. But again, trending in the right direction.
What do you mean not yet? These guys are near their end of their career. So what are you waiting for him to do?
He may never get
waiting
there.
For Weber to win about 6 more Norrises before. These guys got 2, 3, 4 years later.
You know what could put him over the top?
We don't.
Hardest shot at the All-Star weekend could put him over the top.
Yeah, that's a personal accolade.
All right, well, Shea Weber. So that's an interesting. I would err towards putting him in. He's been a pillar. He's been considered one of the toughest one-on-one defenders in the league for some of his time in the league. He has the hardware as far as the Olympic golds. He's been a fairly perennial All-Star, and he's a 3-time Norris finalist. And it was Nick Lidstrom standing in the way of him getting a chance to win some Norrises earlier in his
career. You're talking me into it. You're talking me into Shea Weber. I think I'm a yes on Weber.
Drew Doughty. I think this is a bit of a rubber stamp. 2 Stanley Cups, a Norris, 5-time All-Star, 2 Olympic golds. Is there much debate here?
None.
No debate.
Duncan Keith, 1,100-plus games, 600 points, 3-time Cup. Conn Smythe, 2-time Norris, rubber stamp.
Put him in.
Let's go to the goalies. So, I mean, we have Keith, Doughty, Chara, rubber stamps. Weber and Burns are a little bit of a debate, but we do think all 5 of those guys could very well find themselves in the Hall of Fame. Goaltenders, there's only a few names here. And let's start with Henrik Lundqvist. What's interesting here is a few of these names, or a couple of the guys don't have cups. So Henrik Lundqvist, he's won 1 Vezina, 5-time All-Star. He's got that Olympic gold, which was a great run with Sweden. You know, he's got 458 wins, right? I mean, he's right up there, right? No Stanley Cup.
It's been enough for me. He's been absolutely unbelievable. The gold medal makes a big difference too.
Yes.
But he's a guy who's been, as far as, you know, sort of a volatile position goes year to year and team, it's really tough to judge goaltending, but we just know he's been one of the best goaltenders in the league for such a long time.
Yeah, New York Twitter might kill me for this, but I'm going to say no. The 308 losses, that's a lot of losses here. He should be at well over 500 wins,
but
right?
Wins and losses. Here's the thing.
Tell that to Patrick Waugh.
His lifetime save.
Tell that to Dominic Hasek.
You want to know how many losses Waugh has?
His lifetime save percentage is .918. So a lot of those losses aren't on him.
He played in the 80s?
918 is a very good save percentage, Stu.
Yes.
Okay, so Marc-Andre Fleury then, who has a higher goals against than Lundqvist, has a lower save percentage than Lundqvist. The big difference is he has 3 Stanley Cups. I'm not arguing that.
But he has Fleury the same amount of wins, and he has 40 less losses.
He's tied with Lundqvist, and I believe they're fifth all-time with 458 wins. To me, Lundqvist is in, and to me, Fleury is in.
Fleury's in.
Yes, also in. Fleury's in. Waugh has 315 losses more than Lundqvist. Anyway.
How many more games?
Mike drops.
That's a good point.
How many more games?
A lot more.
Exactly.
Okay, here's an interesting one, guys, because one thing Carey Price has that Lundqvist and Fleury don't have is a Hart Trophy, right? He won the Hart. He was the best player in the league, period. He also has a Vezina the same year he won the Hart, 2015. He's a 7-time All-Star, and he has an Olympic gold. Carey Price. Now, he has 100 fewer wins than Lundqvist and Fleury. His save percentage is tied with Lundqvist at .918, and his goals against is right around the same as Lundqvist and Fleury.
200 fewer games than Fleury and Lundqvist. I say yes. Just based on the fact, when you think of the Montreal Canadiens over the last 10 years, Carey Price was probably, for most of those years, their best player.
Yeah. And I think he was arguably the best player for a 2-3 year stretch in the NHL. So.
Yeah, I agree. I think same thing.
Let's end it with this. Jonathan Quick, 2-time Stanley Cup, 1-time Conn Smythe, 3-time All-Star. Yes, it's been a rough ride the last few years for Jonathan Quick. But, I mean, this guy carried the Kings on many nights to those two championships. In or not in?
All 4 goalies are yeses to me. Quick as well. I just think his peak was as good as I've seen a goaltender play.
Same.
Yeah, #8 seed, remember.
So everyone's getting in.
You get a Hall of Fame.
Everyone is in the Hall of Fame. All right, well, we're going to have, you know, a guy who's had a Hall of Fame season, really, as an executive, and that's Jarmo Kekalainen. He'll be joining us next here on Hockey Central, talking Columbus Blue Jackets and their great success so far this year. That's next.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Central. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, David Amber. Great to have you along. And it's the last show before All-Star Weekend. Well, I guess you guys have a show tomorrow. So it's the second last show before All-Star Weekend, although it kind of technically kicks in tomorrow. It's been a fun run in the first half of this season for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I might add, it's been an unexpected run because we all know it was a difficult offseason losing so many of their key players. They've kept it together, and the man leading the charge has been their GM, Jarmo Kekalainen, who joins us now. Thanks for doing this, Jarmo.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, welcome into the show and congrats. I mean, 5 straight wins for your group, and you look to roll into All-Star break with a win tonight against the Winnipeg Jets and ensconced right now in a playoff position. And this begs the question, how do you explain this? Because you go out and you lose Duchesne, Panarin, Bobrovsky, DeZingle, 4 key parts to that great run you had last year. For most teams, that would mean, okay, we're rebuilding. Playoffs aren't going to be in the picture the following year. That hasn't been the case. How do you explain it?
Well, first of all, I think you can cut that group in half because we didn't have those players 2 weeks before deadline, and we were in the playoff picture all last year. So if you want to talk about the guys that were with us for longer, which is Panarin and Bobrovsky, obviously our goalies that got the opportunity after Bobrovsky's departure have done really well for us. Korpisalo got selected into the All-Star game. Elvis Merzlikins has stepped in and played well, as we internally had expected, because he was a great goaltender in Europe, great goaltender in international competition, and he wasn't a spring chicken anymore. He's 25 years old. He waited for a little bit longer to come over here and had that some adjustment there early on, and you know what, it's probably the toughest job in the whole league to play every 2 or 3 weeks and second of the back-to-backs against the rest of the opponents. So hats off to those #2 goalies that do that regularly throughout their career and have success at it. That's a tough job. So he may have struggled a bit in the beginning, but he's played really well lately. And I think that the most exciting part of it is that both of those guys will be getting better. They're 25 years old and not even close to their prime yet. They're extremely talented and seem to be able to handle the pressure very well. But like I said, there's lots of potential, lots of work to be done in the future as well. And nobody's going to replace Panarin, and that's why we offered him $96 million just before the free agent market opened and tried to keep him at any cost, basically showing him that we love him, but he decided to leave anyway. And our team's never been about the superstars or star players. We've been about a group of guys working hard together, sticking to to our beliefs, our values, and playing hard every night, being hard to play against, and that's going to be the way we achieve success in the future as well, if we do. And I think it took a little bit of unfortunate luck, injuries this year, where we got our stuff together here and started playing again as a team, and that's probably why we've had some success lately. But we believe in the team doing this all together and not just being a bunch of individuals. No matter how good they are, you're always going to have to come together as a team, even if you have a lot of superstars.
That blue-collar approach has worked for your team, and I just wanted to follow up quickly. You mentioned Elvis Merzlikins, which is becoming a great story in the National Hockey League. I want to know specifically what you saw in him. You know, he was doing quite well, the two-time, MVP top goalie in the Swiss League. But what did you see in him specifically where you said his talents will translate well into the National Hockey League?
Well, I got to admit that I'm a pretty simple goalie evaluator. I look at how many times the lamp lights behind the guy and how he reacts to the bad goals and, how he raises the level of his game in the big games or pressure situations. And I ask the guys that know better about the technique and the talent of the goaltending craft or whatever you want to call it. Credit to Ian Clark, who was our goalie coach at the time. He studied Elvis before the draft, and we got him drafted. And then we did some developmental work here with him and Manny Legacy in our development camps that he attended. And obviously, like I said, he played in the highest international level before coming over. But everybody was talking about how much talent he has and what a competitor he is, how athletic he is. And I can see the athleticism, even though I try to stay out of the way when we're analyzing the goalies. But, those characteristics of a strong competitor, he doesn't give up on any pucks in practice and competes for every single puck in the games too is something that we're looking for in every player, not just goaltender, but every player that we draft or sign.
Yarmo, the trend in pro sports these days seems to be that if you can't, win the Stanley Cup or you can't at least, make a good push for it, the teams are more prone to tank. And I wonder how your sort of a philosophy on, the value of playoff experience for the guys you have and making that push versus saying, maybe we don't have the top end guys. We should, be playing for a better draft pick. How do you value sort of the playoff experience versus tanking debate?
Well, I hate that word.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, I wish it wasn't. But we're here to win. And if you're mathematically eliminated out of the playoffs, which is the goal every year, I'm sure all 31 teams think that way. And then when you get to the playoffs, if you get to the playoffs, anything is possible. I think we've shown that last year when we beat Tampa. And I don't think anybody really expected it except the guys in our room. Yeah, you're competing as long as you have any hope, as long as you have any chance, you're competing to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs and have that opportunity. But if you're eliminated and then there's something that you can do to make your future better, of course we're going to start thinking about what the smartest move is to make the team better. But then there's a lottery as well, so nothing is guaranteed. Our amateur scouts have done a tremendous job for our organization. This is with the Red Bank, for example. I think out of one draft, we got Rensky, Gabriel Carlson, Vladislav Gavrikov, and Lukas Nutivaara. That's four defensemen out of one draft that are playing in the NHL. And Gabriel Carlson's been back and forth, but will be a good NHL player. That's the lifeline of an NHL organization. The scouts that can find those players later in the draft like Nutivaara, for example, was a seventh round pick. And you know, those are the things that you need. And that's why I give a lot of credit to our amateur scouts, and our pro scouts are doing it on the other side. So, you know, I get sometimes criticism, sometimes credit for the decisions that I make, but I couldn't do any of it without a good scouting staff.
You were the former director of amateur scouting with the St. Louis Blues. So do you use that background to sort of be more hands-on, you know, with the picks and trying to find diamonds in the rough like Merzlikins? Because I'm looking at your farm right now, and you got players from Switzerland, you got players from Austria, obviously the Swedes and Finns and stuff like that. So are you more hands-on with the approach and trying to find these diamonds in the rough?
No, actually, I'm the other way. It's the easy way, because I've learned doing it for 15 years that the general managers try to stick their hands into the amateur scouting side, seeing the guy one time. I call it highlight scouting.
Mm-hmm.
You go see a guy once or twice, and then your scouts have seen him 15, 20 times, and then all of a sudden you're disputing their viewings. It doesn't work that way. I always say there are no super scouts. There are hardworking scouts, and then there are lazy scouts and hardworking scouts that study and get to know the worst game and the great game and the average game and the player and his character and instincts inside out. Those are the ones who are going to be successful. So, yeah, there are going to be some opportunities where I can get to know a player well enough to enter the discussion with our scouts and ask questions. But other than that, I stay out of their way.
Yarmo, humor me for a sec. If we can go back a year and, you know, heading towards the trade deadline, there were so many hockey pundits who were saying, you know, Columbus, it's too big a risk. They might lose Bobrovsky. They might lose Panarin. They've got to go get assets. And you held tight and you were firm and it paid off. You win a round and you, you know, got some real traction and really paid off for that fan base and for the players on that team. How close were you to going the other way with it? How close were you ever to saying, you know what, it's too big a risk. We're offering Panarin the world and he hasn't accepted. We might lose him and get nothing in return. Just how close were you to sort of saying maybe we should move on from these two players and gain assets?
Well, first of all, Bobrovsky had a no move. So that's no matter what has been said in or publicly about it, we weren't able to move him. And it was never really a possibility anyways.
Okay.
As far as Panarin goes, very rarely you get a player like that in your lineup and when you think that you may have a chance to go far in the playoffs and even win the Stanley Cup. So if you're just going to get future draft picks or prospects that you're not, like, they're not slam dunks, you already feel like you have a good prospect pool yourself, you're just moving your opportunity into the future. And it could have been 3, 4, 5 years into the future if we just came into picks or prospects and stuff like that. So we made a organizational decision here right from the ownership down. Okay, this is the year we're gonna try to go for it. And we'll do, what can we do to maximize our chances at that time to win the Cup? And so we added a few players. We gave up a couple of good prospects, but kept our best ones. And we gave up a first-round pick, which hurt us and will hurt our future a little bit. And that's the price to pay. You're not going to get a point-per-game player if you don't start with that first-round pick. So we spent that, and we accepted the price. And it was a fun ride while it lasted. It didn't last long enough, but like you said, it was great for the franchise. It was great for our city and our fan base and just gave us a little glimpse of that, what it could be like if you go four rounds and you're competing right at the end. But unfortunately, we ran into two really good teams in the first two rounds, and Boston was one game away from winning it all, and St. Louis was the one that deserved it last year. And I mean, it just gives me chills to even think about it, how much fun it could be going four rounds.
Just looking at your team this year, and you know, teams or people, I think are just very impressed given what you've lost and the success you have had. You guys don't give up a ton of goals. In fact, only one team in the league has given up fewer goals than you guys this season. Do you see that as a model for yourselves going forward? Or do you guys think you need to add something on the flip side of that, a little bit of offense? Because that is the other side of it, is the offensive output there kind of lags behind some of the top teams.
Yeah, well, I mean, our coaches are doing a great job adjusting the style of play to the personnel they have. And that's what coaching is about, is adjusting to your opponent, adjusting to the group of players you have, and they've done a great job. And I give a ton of credit to John Tortorella and his staff for doing a great job with our group. But again, our team's going to defend together, or they're going to score together as a team. We might not have the biggest stars. I don't think that the recipe for better success is necessarily adding a player to our group that can score. I think that we have enough scorers. And again, we will score as a team and have success as a team in all areas. So don't want to necessarily rock the chemistry in our room either, because we have a great group of guys that really believe in each other and have fun together and work extremely hard. So, but we're always looking at opportunities to make our team better. It's a never-ending process. So we can have our eyes and ears open.
Well, Yarma, I want to say congratulations on the early season success, and may you have continued success post-All-Star break. Good luck tonight. It's Winnipeg and Columbus on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Our coverage starts at 7 o'clock Eastern time. Yarma, congrats to you and to John Tortorella with the great job you guys have done, and hope it keeps rolling.
Thank you very much.
There is Jarmo Kekalainen, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who've won five straight games and have had sensational goaltending. That's the first name he brought up when we talked about the team, was Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo, two 25-year-olds that they identified as guys who can help lead them moving forward post Bobrovsky, and so far so good. So it's a really nice story brewing in Columbus.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's a lot of scrutiny for Elvis there when he said, I don't want to talk to any of the media here. Just let me go and you know, worry about playing the game. And so far it's paying off for him.
Yeah, it's been a nice run, and we'll see what happens tonight. They might be riding a six-game winning streak if they can get the W tonight against the Jets as they head into the All-Star break, currently in the second wild-card position in the Eastern Conference. Coming up, we got Maddie Has Questions. Matt Marchese is going to join us. We'll check out his attire and check out his questions as we wrap up Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back. We're wrapping up Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, NHL Network, and Sportsnet 360. We were three, now we're four. Matt Marchese joins the fray. Maddie, how you doing?
I'm excellent. And you know what? I feel even better because I wasn't getting ripped about my attire today. It was Justin Bourne. Thank you, Billy Jaffe.
I'm wearing a classy cardigan here, and I'm sitting beside a couch, and I'm getting chirped here. I don't know what's going on.
It's not an Italian couch because it's not wrapped in plastic. I can say that.
Go ahead, Stewie.
No, I just said he's got the couch jacket. He knows all about that. He knew what he was doing today.
Trying to find the most plain shirt that I got, and I figured that one out pretty quick.
Smell the dust from here.
My house isn't that dirty. Today is Mike Bossy's birthday. And if you look at his career stat line, it was 752 games, 573 goals, 553 assists. That is 1,126 points. His worst season was his last, where he had 38 goals in 63 games. That was the only year of his 10-year career where he didn't have 50 goals.
Okay, he should be a Hall of Famer.
He should. But his career was cut short because of a back injury. And when you talk about these three players, Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr, or Mike Bossy, which of those three would you have liked to have seen had a longer career?
I'm going with Lemieux because I believe if he played, you know, as many games as some of these other guys, I think he would be the leading scorer of all time. He was that good. He was that talented.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because I didn't watch the Bobby Orr era, and I know that's like the answer I'm supposed to make. But just Lemieux was my favorite player growing up, so I would have loved to have seen him healthy and just seen what he could have done, because obviously he was just so special when he was healthy.
This is an impossible question, Maddie. Come on.
This is why they pay me the big bucks.
I will say Lemieux as well, just because I identify with that time a little bit more. And I did watch Bossy in all his glory with those Islanders teams, but I'll just say Mario.
The Bossy thing is just really interesting because all he did was score 50 goals. That was it.
I think he's the crazy all-time leader for goals per game.
You're probably right.
I believe he's number one all-time.
Yeah, 573 in 752 games.
You get to play with Clark Gillies. Anyone can score a bunch. That's all it is right there.
Do we need to give the disclaimer again as to who Clark Gillies is? Or okay,
that is a good son-in-law.
All right. In either scenario, who is under more pressure? The Leafs to win a playoff round or the Canadiens to make the playoffs?
Very good question. That's that's a tough one. I'm going to say that the Canadians need to make the playoffs more than Leafs need to win a round, just because for Mark Bergevin's job's sake, like if you miss the playoffs and you go for it and you don't sell at the deadline, that might be it for you, right?
I think the Leafs making the playoffs, because if they don't make it, they're going to fire.
Win around.
They're going to fire Mike Babcock. Oh, wait. They already did. So it's a toss-up, but I think the Montreal fans, they've been loyal a long time. I think they deserve to make the playoffs.
I think it comes down to expectations, though. And I think a lot of us and a lot of their fan base with the Montreal Canadiens weren't saying they're a playoff team at the start of the year. I think everyone was saying the Leafs are positioned now to win a playoff round. So I think it goes back to what the original expectations were. I don't think those expectations have changed. Yes, the Leafs are in the playoff bubble right now, but I don't think the expectation is they better just make the playoffs and get knocked out. I think the expectation from most, you know, people close to the game was the Leafs need to win a round this year.
Is the Calder Trophy still Cale Makar's to lose? So Dominique Kubalik is the latest guy to kind of jump into the fray with 20 goals. Victor Olofsson was kind of working his way into the conversation. Then he got hurt. And Quinn Hughes has been there almost the whole season. And my dark horse, if he keeps playing the way he has, Elvis Merzlikins is also, I believe, in the conversation.
Yeah, but it is to your question, Cale Makar's to lose, because he is the front runner. He's the guy who's been there kind of from the get-go and having a special season there. I still think he's the guy for me right now.
I say yes, and I've been watching, you know, a bunch of Colorado games lately, and he's dominant. So to be dominating like that, you know, taking the puck end-to-end, making plays as a rookie, it's pretty amazing. It's his to lose.
Stu hit it on the head. When he makes highlight reel plays, it's sensational. And Quinn Hughes has been absolutely everything advertised, the high hockey IQ and everything else. But when it comes to the highlight reel, oh, my God, did he just do that plays? It's Cale Makar. And I think because of that and because of where Colorado's elevating in the National Hockey League, that he's the front runner.
Rod Brindamore said that the Hurricanes are expecting Dougie Hamilton to miss the rest of the season. So do the Hurricanes go out and try and acquire a defenseman to fill his role? Now, here's a small list of UFA defensemen who could be available. Mike Green, Sammy Vatanen, Brendan Dillon, Marco Scandella, Dmitry Kulikov.
What about Tyson Barrie?
They're not trading them. You know that. Come on. unless they fall out.
All roads lead back to Toronto.
I don't think they'll trade to add anyone on D. I think that they were a team that looked at their D core before and said, you know, we could move off some of these parts and add, you know, somewhere
else. And
they
did, Justin Falk,
and they were still pretty solid back there. So I think they're comfortable where they're at defensively. You know, it hurts, but I still think that they're pretty comfortable with their back end.
I think it's easier said than done, so I think they're going to sit tight and, you know, see how it goes.
Yeah, sit tight. They're not going to make any rash decisions.
You guys are boring.
Your jacket isn't.
Hey, at least something's exciting.
Bring the personality.
At least something's exciting. These are the bottom five teams in the NHL right now. Detroit, Ottawa, Los Angeles, Anaheim, and New Jersey. Which of these teams would be the best bet to make the playoffs next season?
You know, I'll take my glasses up my nose here and pull out my laptop, and I'll say the Los Angeles Kings, because analytically speaking, they are the best team I know. Stewie's eyes light up. They are the best team of that group. They haven't been nearly as bad as their success. They're actually wins and losses in terms of generating chances and shots and all that stuff. So I can see the Kings not being as bad. They have a couple of big names there too.
I think Detroit's in full tank mode right now, so they have to get the number one overall pick. And I think with the number one pick coming in, I think he could lead them to the promised land of the playoffs.
I'm going to say the Ottawa Senators, because I'm always bleeding Canadian colors. But not just that. I think they have good young parts. Hoberg looks like a legitimate goalie for the future for that team. And they have both their pick and San Jose's pick. Imagine they're going to have two top six, seven picks. What if they end up with Byfield and blank? You know, you got Tkachuk already. You've got Shabbat. You've got White. I like the little young nucleus moving forward.
So the Battle of Ontario could be back on?
Could be back, baby.
I mean, the potential for a Lafreniere and Byfield pickup in one offseason, it would be absolutely earth-shattering, and I am here for it. I would love that.
And then the Carlson trade... And the Duchesne trade.
Carlson,
don't look so bad at the end of the day.
Not at all. That's it, fellas. All-Star Weekend is around the corner. Enjoy. You guys are back tomorrow with Jeff Merrick at the helm. Tonight, remember, it's Columbus and the Jets, 7 o'clock Eastern, over on Sportsnet. I like the Coke.
Thank you. It's about time somebody sticks up for me.